Welcome to the Women Who Fights podcast. We empower female fighters to take full agency over their training. We talk to experts, uncover prejudice, and champion what's driving our progress.
And today we have Nikki with us. Nikki is an honorary founded clinical lecturer in medicine at University College London and research fellow in the Department of Sport and Exercise Sciences at Durham University. She conducts clinical research in sports and dance endocrinology and is a member of the British Association of Sport and Exercise Medicine and the British Menopause Society. Her aim is to redefine optimal health and fitness for the individual. Hello, Nikki, and thank you for coming. Can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Listen, first of all, thanks for inviting me on this, and I'm looking forward to having a good discussion. So, really going back to, you know, why am I talking about hormones and exercise, I suppose you're asking me, is because as a youngster, I was always very, I was into a lot of sports at school, tennis, swimming, gymnastics, ballet. Ballet actually turned out to be my passion, as it turned out. But the thing was, I was very active and enjoying doing these sports. But I wanted to know how was my body doing this, and how what I could do to be even better and to improve myself. And then I realized I was really enjoyed sciences. I realized that how I was going to find out these answers and how I was going to, you know, help other people achieve their goals was, number one, by doing medicine, because that's obviously the study of the human body and its application, the application of the science to people, but also specifically why hormones, because hormones are our internal chemical messengers. They're really influenced by what we do in terms of exercise and nutrition. And they're the vital link between the outside and the inside, because the hormones go into our DNA and tell the DNA what proteins to make. So determine genetic expression, if we want to give it a posh word. Basically, hormones are pivotal to health and performance. And so that's sort of my journey. I wanted to find out more. Initially, it started off as my own personal interest. I wanted to know, but then I realized, actually, everyone else wants to know, right? And I want to help people find out how to know and what to do to be at their best. So that's how I came round to where I am sitting here today. It's taking a long time to get there, obviously. You know, circuitous medical training, you know, you have to get all your medical experience, et cetera, but then eventually now I can sit here and look back and say, actually, looking back on me as a, you know, as a teenager, actually, I'm pretty proud that I got to eventually where I wanted to be.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, what you're doing, I mean, just what you said there about how hormones go into your DNA and tell them what to do. I didn't know that.
Ah, there
like,
you go.
That's really, how does that work? What does that?
Well, so the hormones, yeah, well, that's it really. They mosey on into the cell, go into the cell nucleus, and then they, you know, wake up that particular gene or section of the genetic code and say, right, go. And DNA makes protein. So for example, let's take an example, right? Let's take growth hormone, okay? I don't know if actually that's the best example, but anyway, we'll take growth hormone as an example. And it goes into the cell and it goes to the bit of, it knows, how does it know where to go? I don't know, it has a map. Anyway, it goes to the particular bit of the DNA, the gene, for the bit to make a muscle protein, right? And it goes and says, right, make it. You see? Okay. So that's why hormones, most hormones, not all of them, but in general terms, hormones are a little bit slower form of communication. Maybe from biology school we remember, you know, remember the nervous system is a quick reaction communication thing, but the hormones are a little bit slower. Of course, there are some exceptions, adrenaline, etc. Those are fast-acting ones, but generally these hormones, you know, it takes time to grow, right, for example, and develop a muscle. But this goes back to the performance side, on your health side. So if you're doing the exercise, if you're doing exercise, whatever it is, fighting or ballet in my case, whatever it is, you want to get fitter from doing that. You want to improve, right? Mm-hmm. But your hormones are going to help you do that, mm-hmm. because the particular hormones will go in, like I said, the growth hormone to make muscle or protein or whatever it is. So that's why you have to be kind and treat your hormones nicely. Harness your hormones is really what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. So exercise endocrinology is, that's the study of how exercise impacts your hormones.
Pretty much. And in turn, how that affects your overall health. By the way, when we say health, we should say health is physical, mental, and social health. It's not just physical, mm-hmm. right? Anyway, so that, but the hormones are this link between the outside, your behaviors, what you do, mm-hmm. your training, your nutrition and your recovery. Hormones are this vital link between that and communicating with your DNA and inside what to do and how to drive the adaptations. So exercise endocrinology, coming back to your original question, is basically the study of how to make that work, mm-hmm. really to its best for the individual. I mean, that's the general terms we've spoken about. That's what the principle is. But then, of course, the detail of it, every individual, we are all, you know, is slightly different. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's a difference between men and women, but even between women, you know what I mean? There's lots of differences. So the fine tuning of it is really what I do. So, so an individual will come to me and say, right, you know, this is what I'm doing. Are my hormones happy with what I'm doing?
Yeah.
Right? You might think, oh, I'm doing the right thing, but you don't know. You think, this is where generic advice gets a bit tricky. You might have read something on Instagram that says, oh, I should be, I don't know, wherever it is. I can't think of an example. I should be eating a lettuce leaf standing on my head or something. I don't know, whatever it is. Sometimes you do see slightly crazy things. Anyway, but actually, is that right for you? But the only way you're going to know is what your body thinks of that. And so mm-hmm. that's why if you look at, see what how your hormones are viewing that, is that right for you?
Yeah. I mean, so can your hormones are really important. Well, they sound essential for getting muscle and, you know, telling the DNA what to do. Correct. And I'm assuming then is it like the exercise then also affects your hormones and how they function? So it's sort of like
Very
they
good
work
point.
Together.
Listen, you have it. We have endocrinology. You've got it within a few minutes. Exactly. This is fascinating. You know, it's a feedback like that from the outside in, but it's also from the inside out. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So if, for example, you know, your estrogen, women, we're talking about estrogen. If you're not making enough estrogen, then that's going to affect your both your mental and your physical health, actually. So mm-hmm. then from the outside, and guess what? If you're not strong, literally, strong in all senses, physical and mental, guess what? You're not going to be able to exercise well. So mm-hmm. you're absolutely right that there's an internal mechanism going on, but mm-hmm. also there's a bigger picture of it, the whole feedback loop. And so you can't ignore any bit of those stages. Otherwise, that's when you come a cropper, right?
But and how would you know if you had a hormone problem? And like what? How does that manifest? Like what? I can't imagine, other than like the symptoms that something's not right, which is like the fatigue, maybe, you know, you're not sleeping well, all these other things. Is there anything that you can look out for? Is it something where you have to dive in and you have to look at every possible problem?
Well, you should, I mean, in medicine, by the way, what I've been saying is about assuming that the system is okay and you can influence it. So of course, I'm not talking specifically about medical endocrine conditions. You know, everyone's heard about, know someone that's had a big goiter and their thyroid isn't working. So there's sort of a disease, if we could want to put it that way, or medical condition. And that's my sort of day job in the NHS, you know. But I'm talking about, the fine tuning of the hormones, okay? Mm-hmm. So, but you're absolutely, you make a very good point that this is the other reason I love hormones, is because it's not obvious. I love a detective story. I love a puzzle. I love a challenge. You're right. If because hormones have so many diverse effects, estrogen, it affects all the different systems in the body, okay? It's not just about fertility, by the way, okay? It affects so many systems in the body. So as you're saying, and also there are many reasons why you might be feeling tired, but trying to narrow it down is a good starting point. mm-hmm. trying to yourself just to see which particular areas, and just doing a check. Oh, actually, is that because I stayed up really late last night and whatever? So just doing a simple check is a good starting point. Trying to narrow it down to what it is, mm-hmm. and then you can direct the test, because ultimately, yes, one has to look at what's going on in the hormones. But that's my job. I have to try and filter it down, because otherwise, potentially, you could do, I don't know how many blood tests there are or investigations. Obviously, it's not a fishing trip, you know, you just don't. So you try and narrow it down as much as you can, but you're absolutely right, it can be tricky. But, you know, having done this for 30 years, I can sometimes it's experience. You get to feel, oh, that, you know, you're listening to the person and it's like, oof, that does sound more like, you know, whatever it is, thyroids are not quite right or something like that.
Yeah.
But you're right, it can be tricky. But for women, of course, the most obvious thing is, are you having periods? That's the barometer of your internal healthy hormones. So for women, in some ways, it's a little bit more straightforward from that point of view. That's always the sort of one of the important questions that I'm not going to ask top of the list.
For a
woman, what's happening with your periods? Because that will give us a very good starting point of if what's going on there.
Would too much period pain ring any alarm bells of something not going right with the hormones?
Well, if it's a new thing. I mean, some women, unfortunately, it's just, you know, they do tend to suffer more in general, but especially if it's an increase for you, something unusual. And obviously if it's really, really affecting you, you know, like you really, for example, feel you can't go to work or you can't do something. If it's really, really, you know what I mean? I think women, we're tough, right? So we're put up with quite a lot. But if it's really got to the point, it's like, this is too much, you know, it's really affecting your life, then yes, absolutely, that is something. But then that's, you know, it would go, then we even start to wonder, is it something connected with the hormones, you know, like some medical conditions, endometriosis, all this sort of thing. Uh-huh. But by the way, endometriosis is driven by the female hormones. So it would depend. So yes, heavy, painful periods definitely would need looking into to see what's going on.
So you just said endometriosis is driven by hormones. How does that work? Because then that would imply that if you could in some way influence the hormones, it would then maybe help.
Oh, well, listen, look at
with
you.
Endometriosis.
You're on it. Correct. Yeah, exactly. Listen, you're absolutely on it. And actually, one of the treatments for endometriosis is to put someone on the contraceptive pill, which absolutely dials down all your female hormones. And also when you reach the menopause, I mean, by the way, it's not nice reaching your menopause, just to say. But anyway.
We need to talk about that.
I can help.
We need to talk about that.
Yeah, we'll come to that. But for example, talking about endometriosis, the proof is that when you reach the menopause and your hormones go very low, then actually endometriosis, if you have it, that improves, right? And so you're absolutely right. I mean, I try to avoid. Sometimes you have to take medication. There's no two ways about it, you know. Sometimes, like endometriosis, you've tried all the sort of lifestyle things, but it's like, actually, this is now too much. And then actually it comes to the point where we actually need to suppress the hormones. And so it would need a medication. And, you know, and then we're going to talk about HRT when you have to replace it. So there are some situations where actually, you know, you have to, but ideally the first port of call, which I see so often, is that, doctors are busy, patients want quick answers, solutions. So walking out with a prescription, everyone feels happier, you know, but that's not always a prescription for a medication I'm talking about, right? It might be necessary. You know, sometimes that is required.
Yeah.
So like endometriosis, for example. But I always prefer to try and see if there's something that can be done in terms of lifestyle behaviours before we have to talk about medication.
Would the mapping that you do still work if someone is taking the pill? Because it's like a mask of the hormones.
Yes, yes. Well, no, you're absolutely correct also. So what we have developed about this female hormone mapping, I'm the chief medical officer of Forth, which is a, we've been doing lots of blood tests, but actually now we've developed a more sophisticated way for women who aren't on any form of contraception, so they can literally map, chart how their hormones are fluctuating. But for those, if you are taking the combined oral contraceptive pill, okay, I know you get a bleed, right? But that's not menstruation, okay? Mm. It's what's called a withdrawal bleed. It's a fake period, all those words, okay? Because if you look at, I can tell you right now, if I did a hormone profile of someone that's on the pill, I can tell you what it would show. Everything is really, all four female hormones is absolutely flatline, low, 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 nothing happening. Mm-hmm. Because it switches them off, you see? Mm-hmm. So in terms of the test I'm talking about, the mapping, the tracking your hormones, we can't because it would be flat. So it's a waste of time. But I think you bring up such an important point. And the combined oral contraceptive pill, like we said, it's very good for some medical conditions. Endometriosis, polycystic ovaries, PCOS, where the testosterone is very high and the woman's really troubled with acne and blah, blah, you know. So it's great. And also, but the clue is in the name. Contraception, and it knocks out all the hormones, and the progesterone only. Not all of them knock out the hormones, but the thing is, it still makes it very difficult because sometimes the progesterone only, you don't get any bleeds at all. So, you know, if you did want to try and track what your hormones are doing over the cycle, you don't know. You literally, you're disorientated. You don't know where you would do the test. So that's the thing about the hormonal contraception.
Yeah. Would you be able to tell us why the doctors in the NHS are very, very happy giving out contraceptives, or are you not allowed?
No. But it's like I said, everyone feels happier.
Right.
You know, you're right, as a doctor, I mean, I'm not a general practitioner,
right?
And I know my colleagues are really, really pushed in general practice, so no criticism intended, but, you know, they're rushed and the patient comes in and actually, you know, the contraceptive pill, it is very good contraception. There's no denying it. However, that it does not protect. There are some downsides to it, like I've discussed. For some women, it's good that we suppress their hormones, but for quite a lot, it's not so good. And also, the only type of contraception that prevents sexually transmitted diseases are condoms, full stop. Mm. So, but it's a tricky one because I've heard the argument, well, a teenage girl, give her the hormonal contraception and then she won't get pregnant, which is yes, but I mean, actually, maybe just go back to explaining to the youngster. You know, actually, rather than just giving them this pill, because I have a lot of women that come to me and say, well, I was just kind of not, I mean, forced is too strong a word, but it was just like, oh, that's the default. Yeah. But actually, if it had been explained to them, by the way, so you know, this will not prevent sexually transmitted diseases. This will suppress all your hormones. Mm. And there is actually a warning in the US that it could potentially impact bone health if you start taking it very, very young, because you suppressed all your hormones. So actually, I think we, you know, giving more information, more options. So it's a really, really informed choice.
Exactly.
Yeah, I feel like that was the thing. When I was younger, it was like, I think I went in and to talk about it, and I left with a prescription, but yes, I didn't really understand what it was about. And then when I took it, I was on like the first one, which was Celeste, and I gained weight, my boobs got bigger.
Yeah.
I got really like sort of just my mind went a bit disorientated. I felt very anxious a lot of the time. And I didn't really understand it was the pill for ages because I was just like, I was 19 and my body was still sort of changing. And then I think I went on like a few different ones because they all made me really depressed. Mm. And then I came off them when I just decided, like, I was like, no, I need a break. And I never used to get painful periods. And then after I stopped taking the pill for like 1 or 2 years, I had really painful periods, which have now eased off. But I was just thinking earlier, like, that was like my body's, my hormones were sort of starting up again.
Exactly, because they've been switched off. So it was like you were a teenager again, starting your period again, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like the pain was like my body being, like my hormones were clearly out of whack a bit because I was...
Yeah, they've been out of practice.
Yeah, I've been out of practice, yeah.
And
there's been a hibernation. Yeah. So yeah. I think, but listen, this is something I think is really, really important because... You know, the emphasis is so much on, oh, how not to get pregnant. But actually, maybe we should open up the whole thing about, let's talk about what these hormones are good for.
Mm. Yeah.
If you still, at the end of knowing all of this, still want to take it, fine. But if actually you're thinking, well, you know what? I don't want to meddle with my hormones at this crucial time when everything is changing and whatever. I would prefer to do something else. So you have more... options on the table. But anyway, that's definitely something. But the other situation where I found that women often are just bunged on the pill is if their periods have stopped. So their periods have started and then they stop. And often that is, especially if they're doing a lot of exercise, that's because of REDS, relative energy deficiency in sport. And so their periods stop, and this is called functional hypothalamic amenorrhea. And guess what you do? If you do a blood test of someone with FHA, guess what it shows? All hormones are low, 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 low line. Like, and yet, it's still, unfortunately, lots of these women get put on the pill. I've already told you that the combined contraceptive pill, what does that do to the hormones? Makes them more flat. So you're just reinforcing that. Mm-hmm. And it's actually the Endocrine Society guidelines 2017 say, don't put, if you haven't got a period... Already, if you're amenorrheic, no periods, don't put them on the pill. But again, it's this thing about it makes everyone feel better.
Right,
you feel you're doing something. You've got the, you know, you're having this bleed, which falls you into this false sense of security. But actually, it's just reinforcing that shutdown. And also, that's actually quite risky for the bone health. It doesn't improve your. It doesn't help your bones.
No,
because the hormones are so low.
So, I mean, it might be, you just sort of mentioned it might be worth talking about the benefits of hormones, and maybe we should do that, and you can explain why we need them, why they're so important.
Yeah, well, it's the physical and mental, and it was interesting you said when you were on the pill, actually, you know, it affected your mood. So why are we talking about female hormones?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So because otherwise we could be here all day.
Yeah.
let's talk about female hormones. So. What's so good about them, right? So the ones that are made by the ovaries are estrogen. Estradiol is the most potent one, the most strongest one, if you will, and progesterone. I think we focus so much on estrogen, but actually we should talk about progesterone. It's a duet, those two together. So what do they do? Why are they so good? Obviously, yes, we have to put fertility, of course, yes. But we'll just put that to the side, all right? Because actually, out of all the other things we're going to talk about, that's just, you know. So fertility, for sure. But bones, we just mentioned there, okay? Bones, by the way, in men and women, is dependent on estradiol, okay? So if your estradiol is low, either because your periods are stopped because, frankly, you're underfueling, or because you're on the combined oral contraceptive pill, your bones potentially can get weaker. I think everyone's heard of osteoporosis, you know, weak bones. I'm not saying that you will suddenly develop osteoporosis the next day, but it will put you in a, you know, in not a great position for your bone health. So bones is definitely there. Also, soft tissues as well, you know, muscles, ligaments, tendons, because we know that women whose periods have stopped, they're more likely to get soft tissue injuries. Not just the bone stress fractures, but also soft tissue injuries. So those female hormones, ovarian hormones, very important for musculoskeletal system. Also, you mentioned mental health. They're important as neurotransmitters in our brain. So having low levels of estrogen, can make us feel sad. You know, and this is what perimenopausal women feel, by the way, mood changes. But also actually cognitive function, so your reaction time. Interesting study, in women whose periods had stopped, their reaction time was slower and their peak muscle, peak power production was lower. So it affects your, because the brain isn't quite switched on. So those are some of the things. I mean, listen, I could go on, and it also affects the gut and all sorts of things, but probably if we just confine it to
how
that.
How does it affect the gut?
Oh, right. Well, absorption. I mean, it's a little bit... listen, wow, how long have we got? Right, listen, it does affect gut motility. I mean, in the case of low energy availability, if not eating enough, to be fair, it is also due to there isn't enough energy to get the gut to move. But in combination with low estrogen, basically it's not good for absorption, right?
Okay.
But also gut microbiome as well. I think that's the big talking
topic. It's a big thing these days.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it honestly, it affects everything. But if we just sort of leave it at physical, mental, but ultimately your performance. Because women whose periods stopped, they did a study in swimmers, and the swimmers who didn't have periods, they didn't improve so much as those women that were having regular periods. Okay.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I can talk about all these things, about bone health and things, but, you know, there might be some women listening, haven't got periods and they haven't had a stress fracture and they think they're fine, but actually you're selling yourself short if you don't have your female hormones working for you and you won't achieve what you want to achieve. You know, it's just limiting where you could be.
Definitely. I mean, it does feel so... I feel like things are changing in terms of education about these things, though, because I feel like before, you know, I would have gone into... Well, anyway, you go into the doctor and they give you the pill. But now there's so much more information about it available, which I think is really positive. I mean, a lot of the people who come to you, like the athletes, are they all on contraception of some kind?
No. They tend not so much to be. Maybe it's because I spoke. Maybe it's because they know and actually it's just masking what's going on.
Yeah.
It's a mixture, to be fair. I mean, I think actually the majority now, because you say there's better information there, actually prefer not, because they realise it is it's a vital training metric. Just as you monitor your heart rate and, I don't know, whatever, your power meter if you're a cyclist, or, you know, all these things we're monitoring, but there's a free monthly health check, your menstrual period. So why won't you... So it's much better to have that. And also, if you... then get to know your cycle, right? And you get to know, you mentioned painful periods, you get to know how it is for you. And so you put in place, that's what I'm doing with the dance company at the minute. They're tracking their cycles, and, you know, then they can be prepared and you can figure out, right, okay, I know I'm going to have a pain. It looks like I'm coming up for a period night. It was a bit painful last time, but Nikki said, if I do this, some yoga and stretching, it's going to be better. You know what I mean? So you practice out what you're going to do. Just as you do your training, you practice things. You can practice strategies with your so it's better, isn't it?
I've got my mum's an Iyengar yoga teacher and she I've got the menstrual sequence, which is like the stretches that really help you.
Yeah, exactly. And that's been proven, yeah.
When I get round to doing them,
there's been a study. There's been a study to say, I can't remember the name of the paper, but to say that actually doing, I mean, personally, I used to find that swimming helped because it's kind of stretched out my body. But it's just any sort of just slow stretching thing.
Wow.
Because, you know, when you get pain, you just want to go like this.
Yeah.
Right. You just want to go. But actually, that's the worst thing you could do. You actually need to...
space.
Yeah, exactly. You need to stretch. But yoga is great. Swimming, I used to find, was quite good. You know, whatever, something like that. Yeah.
Wow. But it was always specific. It was specific things in yoga, like really restorative, gentle. It wasn't like chaturanga and like sort of doing difficult
things. Stretching, slowly
things. And it was quite amazing because you're like, oh, actually, and when I've done it, my period is shorter, less painful, like it kind of feels smoother. It's everything just kind of goes.
Shanti, you need to share all the links.
I will.
But also I think it's just doing that. You're just taking the time to be in your body. You know what I mean? We're all rushing around, and but actually just like getting in tune with your body, all those sorts of things. So I think that, I mean, listen, as I say, usually when I talk about this, everyone comes away, goes, might go away with the impression, oh, it's this doctor that doesn't think we should be on hormonal contraception. But I just want to say, That it is important for some medical conditions, but I think basically it's just making that informed decision.
Yeah,
that is what. So you know what it's doing to your body. If you're still happy to do it, fine. You know, and if it works for you, great. But just be aware, don't just think that, oh, that's the only option, right? And actually you are missing out potentially on using that free monthly health check.
So I'll go, Marina.
I just wanted to ask, let's go one step back. Who are your patients and what do you offer them so that the audience knows what exactly we're talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Who can see you?
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, I actually see men and women, but if we're talking specifically about women, basically women of any age. So, you know, from the teenagers, who maybe have been sort of plonked on the pill or whatever, or whose teenagers whose periods are slow starting. For women who's, you know, they're just, you know, like we said, having a problematic time with their periods, whether it's a painful period or just, you know, that premenstrual thing in the luteal phase when you feel really bad. So it's that age group, or the women whose periods have stopped, particularly I do a lot on REDS, relative energy deficiency in sports. So those sorts of people would come to me for advice how to get their periods back again, or how to sort of, you know, match up their period in their training. And then, of course, the older people, you two are youngsters, the older people, you know, being 40, it's tricky. Right, because it's that in-between stage where you have hopefully been having regular periods and now the periods are getting your ovaries are becoming a little bit, they're playing up a bit. But you're not yet menopausal. Menopause is when your periods stop, the ovaries pack in, that's it, end. And in some ways that's like, at least you know where you are, right? It's okay, fine, they've stopped. But it's in that lead up to it where the hormones are really all over the shop. That's also I'm seeing a particularly increase in those sorts of women because they can't find the answers. It's the uncertainty. It's horrible. It's like, am I going mad? Or, you know, am I just like, what's going on with me? Is it the perimenopause? Or if you are an exerciser, actually, is it that I have got out of balance in terms of my nutrition and my training load, you know? And if I unwittingly got into res, and at the moment, and to date, it is very difficult to say, tell the woman, give them a, but this is where this this mapping of female hormones, the modeling of the female hormones will exactly tell me, or more importantly, tell the woman, where is she? Is it that her ovaries are, you know, sort of slowing down, as it were, or is it that it's, you know, the control center, it's actually the imbalance of her behaviors that are causing the problem? And that's, I mean, I suppose you could say, oh, well, it will really make it more personal what you need to do next. If it's the imbalance of what you're doing, then obviously you can address that. But if actually it's the perimenopause, that doesn't mean, oh, well, you just give up, by the way. Of course not, no. But you do some more specific things that are going to be helpful, bearing in mind your hormones are going down, okay? And also start doing your homework about HRT. But at the moment, it's very difficult to get the information because the NHS is very, very stretched. And actually the NICE guidelines say it's not good to do a single blood test. I absolutely agree on a perimenopause because you don't know, because it's an intermittent fault. You don't know if you're going to catch it when it's good or bad or whatever. It's very confusing. And the other thing is, and there's been a lot of talk about this, that, you know, this does need ideally doctors who have particular experience in menopause. And actually, I'm going to flash my book up here.
yes, please.
The British Menopause Society, it's excellent. I'm a member of the British Menopause Society, a medical member, and they've just introduced a sort of a specialist training course, which I'm going to complete soon. And so, again, GPs, they've got to, you know, they see so many patients, it's really difficult. And actually, hopefully the British Menopause Society want to make sure that at least there's one GP in every practice, ideally. They've asked this, the government, that who has some more specialist insights into menopause. But so that's the other group of women I'm seeing more and more. Because why shouldn't we, by the way, as older women, I'm talking about me as well now, you know, we want to carry on doing whatever we're doing. For me, it's ballet or whatever. But actually, it's a really tricky time to get the information. It's that uncertainty. Where am I in perimenopause? And also all this debate about HRT. You know, I've done all the research and listened to all the lectures that, from the British Menopause Society. So I can give, that's who I'm seeing, actually quite a lot of women like that who want advice, what to do.
So if you were, okay, let's say a perimenopausal woman comes and she, it is perimenopause. It's not another hormonal problem.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What can, and you look at her hormones, you're like, yeah, you're clearly in that phase.
Yes.
What can you, because my mum's going through that and she's, you know, trying to find answers and help and doing lots of things. What is there any way that you can actually help the experience and help it be smoother and less confusing and all over the place?
Absolutely. I mean, if she wants to, well, first of all, why didn't she come and see me? but you know, the British Menopause Society has lots of good advice. And actually, you know what, the NHS and the NICE websites and the Royal College of Obstetric Gynaecology, they're actually pretty good if people look there, right? Don't look on other, you know, sites, frankly, because you get all sorts of weird things. Anyway, but in practical terms, for example, doing exercise actually helps with hot flushes, okay? Mm-hmm. So that's a study. So that's number one. So number one, actually doing exercise is good. So don't stop.
Right? And what kind of exercise? That helps.
Listen, whatever you fancy, because I've found as a doctor over the years, there's no point. I hate this expression, prescribing exercise. Because if I say, oh, go swimming, the person hates swimming, that's not going to happen. So the conversation is, what exercise do you like doing? But ideally nothing too intense.
So
but
you wouldn't advise weightlifting, for example?
Well, listen, the thing is, number one, exercise in general terms. Actually, weightlifting, you know what, is actually very good for perimenopausal women because of the body composition. It will help with muscle and it will actually help with bone strength. But again, I'm not going to force a woman who hates going to the gym. Mm. And if I mention the word deadlift, that gives her a hot flush. I'm not going to force her. You know what I mean? So it's, yes, I will bring it up in the conversation. First of all, let's establish what exercise she's doing already. What does she like doing? Mm. Try and work in some strength work, whether that is doing weightlifting, or whether that is, I'm also a Pilates teacher, or whether that is just doing some sort of resistance thing.
Right.
I mean, I have to be honest, and I'm one of those ones that don't like the gym. So I count my strength work as ballet and all that sort of thing, and I do Pilates and things like that.
Yeah.
There are other ways of doing strength work, climbing, brilliant. So, you know, so absolutely the type of exercise has to, you make a very good point, include some sort of strength work, but the exact thing will depend on the person, what they want to do. For body composition and for the bone health, really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
Other things, vitamin D is really important. It's important for all of us. But it's the only, I mean, people often ask me about supplements and things like this, but it's, listen, if you're eating a varied diet, you should be able to get all the micronutrients you need, but vitamin D is the exception because it comes from sunlight, right? So I take 1,000 IU per day, full stop, throughout the year, because we're in England after all, okay, even over the summer. But it becomes even more important, I would say, for perimenopause because of the estrogen going down and the bones potentially not being so happy. So those are some sort of straightforward things. And, you know, just a review, it's a good time. I try and make it a positive time. This, okay, it is, you know, it's that progression in life. You know, it's, okay, my periods are going to stop soon. And it's a new phase of my life. It's a significant event. We're not going to make light of that. But actually looking on it in a positive way, it's like, okay, this is now a good opportunity to just look at everything. Look at my nutrition. Look at my exercise. You know, look at my sleep patterns, all these sorts of things. Try and use it as an opportunity to, you know, check in on stuff like this. And definitely, of course, the HRT.
Yeah.
Really super important that we put out the correct information.
Mm-hmm.
And the British Menopause Society are brilliant in this and, you know, getting the facts out there. That unfortunately, there was this study some years ago that was misrepresented. sort of leaked out to the media and it put the frighteners, it put back women's health by 10 years. That is specifically a quote from the vice president of the Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. It misrepresented the facts that actually, when you looked at the study, it was not a good example because it was women that were older in their 60s, and also being America, quite a lot of them were overweight, which is a big risk factor for breast cancer. So HRT is, of course, for every individual. It's, again, every individual. There are still going to be some women where it's contraindicated. If they've got a close family history of breast cancer, it's true. That's not going to be ideal. But, generally, it's something that at least have a discussion about it and look at it and consider it. And now the best form of HRT is, as the British Menopause Society call it, is sort of mild, if you know what I mean. It's much better taking the estrogen through the skin, for example, than the particular type of progesterone, micronized progesterone, which is very mild. And it's exactly the same as your body. It's body identical. Mm-hmm. So it just makes you feel psychologically, it's like I'm just giving my body what it's been seeing for the last however many years. Mm. It's much. And this is available on the NHS, licensed, regulated, all that sort of thing. So people should not be conned into taking other stuff that is not licensed, not regulated, and doesn't do the job really.
And so what if you get to, if you, so you go through perimenopause, you go menopause, you're postmenopausal, you decide not that HRT wasn't something you wanted to go for, and your hormones are now sort of down low. What's, because you said before that they impact your mental sort of your whether, you know, estrogen helps make you happy and it influences your sort of the connections to make, you know, because I feel like, you know, what, how do you then adjust to that? And like what, because are you sort of then going to just be a bit clumsier? Are you just then going to be a bit more down for that, for the rest of your life? Like how does
that's a very good question. And again, like most things, it's individual. They say that the shock, as it were, to the system of that fall, it's the ovarian hormones that plummet down, that it does ease with time. Okay. But again, some people, it's individual. So it might ease with time and you get past it. Again, people often think I'm against the combined oral and they think I'm very pro-HRT. What you have to say is that it's probably fair about the HRT because it reduces all-cause mortality. So it reduces all-cause of death for your cardiovascular health. That's something we didn't mention before.
Really?
If your periods stop, I never measure lipids in someone who's a young person whose periods are stopped because I know, well, it will show and it will get them upset and they think they shouldn't eat any fat. But actually what it is estrogen. So when you reach the menopause, women increase risk of heart disease. So, anyway, HRT is good from that point of view in the bone health. So, but listen, but you're right, everyone has a choice. Like we said, everyone has a choice about the pill. Everyone should have a choice about HRT. And if you just still, even after what I've said, you're not convinced and you don't want to, it's like, that's fine. That's your choice. So long as you made that informed choice and you've got the fact and you haven't been misled by scaremongering stuff, you know, then probably the symptoms will ease.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Probably they will, but equally, I don't want people to come back and say, oh, I thought you said they were going to get better and they got worse and they're the same. It's individual. But also, I think the body, I think we're very good at adapting. And anyway, we're women, right? We're tough. So I think the thing is, you know, it's like you just get used to it. So you think they are less. Now, whether it's truly they've got less or you've just got used to it, I don't know.
Mm.
It's an interesting psychological point. I don't know.
Yeah, it's exciting how much information is now available about it. But I'm kind of nervous about hitting that. I don't know why. I mean, do you know what I mean? It's happening in the future and you're just like, oh, that looks scary.
Well, sure. Well, it is. But it won't be if you know more about it. Why things are scary is when it's the uncertainty and the unknown. Mm. But if you know it, it's like, you know, that will happen. Every woman we'll have menopause. Okay, that's it. Hopefully, you know, every woman is healthy and gets to there. There are obviously conditions which might prevent that happening in the sense or early menopause and all those sorts of things. But for the majority of every woman, let's say, pretty much will go through this. So it's not a unique thing. You know, it's an important, but we don't want to dismiss it. It absolutely is a turning point, you know, just as getting your first period is a significant event. Having your last period is a significant event because physically, because of the hormones changing, but also psychologically, because whether you've chosen to have children or not, you know, that's again your choice, whether you've chosen or whatever, that is pretty much the full stop. So it's like, oh, right, that's done. You know, and yeah, then you realize, oh, actually I am getting older. So absolutely. And it's a time of life when things are changing. If you have got children, they've left home. You know what I mean? Stuff happens then anyway.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't want to minimize that this is a challenging time, but like everything, having the information, having the understanding of what it is in advance, you know, even for you youngsters, you know, again, it's having been prepared. I mean, you can look at the finer detail, of course, you couldn't even look at that.
Mm.
But just having some understanding of what it is, what there is at the minute, because by the time you youngsters get there, actually, there will probably be even a better form of HRT and all that sort of thing.
So in your years, in all of your years of experience, what are the problems that you have noticed around understanding the female hormones around that time, and knowing how to work around them? I'm talking about the healthcare in general.
In general, or just for perimenopause?
For perimenopausal women.
Oh, right. Well, mainly I think that because it is a scare, it can potentially be a scary thing and people aren't talking about it.
Yeah.
Or not until now. I think that's really the main thing I found. And actually, I never asked my grandmother. And it was only relatively recently
I asked
my mother. No, number one, I suppose I didn't want to talk about that. And actually, I don't know, I think she would have done if I'd asked her directly. She was my grandmother after all.
Yeah.
And it was only just quite recently, you know, so I think actually it's also partly us, but I think now we're getting to talk about it more. And you know, if you do have female relations that you know, you know, honestly, I encourage you to speak to them.
Yeah.
And just to see. And it's very interesting. So that's the main thing. That if we can't speak about it with our family, you know, it's very unlikely we're going to feel, you know, talk about it in other contexts.
Yeah.
You know, talk about it at work. And it's, you know what? I'm feeling absolutely dreadful right now or something. It's unlikely. And also even seeing your doctor, you know, I mean, for me personally, I don't mind because I am a doctor, I guess. So I'm pretty matter of fact. And, you know, I just went into my GP and said, hey, I want some HRT. And it was all totally, you know, fine. Yeah. But, you know, it's even if you're speaking to a female doctor, I think sometimes it can be awkward. I mean, it's awkward talking about vaginal dryness and painful sex. Even if you're talking to a doctor, it's not the sort of, you know what I mean? So it's a tricky thing.
If it's not language you're used to, if it's not something you're used to, you're totally
exactly,
right.
Exactly.
If you're used to being like talking about it and that language is familiar, then it's just, it stops having this sort of embarrassment attached to it. Yes, and actually it's just like, well, this is a body.
Exactly. Well, this is evolution. You know, it's nothing new. It's been happening for millions and millions of years, but the thing that has changed is our life expectancy. Because, you know, back in the Tudor times, most women would be dead of childbirth. They would never reach menopause. Wouldn't they, if you think about it?
Yeah.
So women's life expectancy, now more and more and more women are spending more and more of their life, up to a third of their life, in the menopause state. So it's not it's something we absolutely need to be talking about because it's, you know, more and more women are going through this and
it's
living
more relevant.
In the state. More relevant, exactly, and the quality of life and all that sort of thing.
And the more we're talking about it, the less scary it looks, it feels.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It, and to know, just talk about it, like, this is going to happen, and, you know, what are you going to do, and what the practicalities are.
Yeah.
So exactly, I think just making it like we're doing now, just making it part of the conversation.
I'd like to, can we just, we've sort of covered it, but just to go over in like a briefly, the reasons why women should know more about their hormones and what the benefits are, and what are the flags, what are the red flags for there being a problem in the first place, and what you can do to solve those problems. Okay. Let's say they're more, that it's just, you know, nothing, it's not a condition like a thyroid problem.
Yeah.
It's just the estrogen and progesterone maybe aren't in.
Yeah. So why you need to, so the importance that you have to prompt me. So number one even, was the importance of hormones, why you need to know about them is because they are crucial to all aspects of your health, physical, mental, and social health. So absolutely, you need to know what your hormones are doing, get in tune with them, and treat them with respect. And don't expect them, you know, feed them, literally, exercise them, literally, you know, and rest, sleep, so important. Lots of hormones released when you sleep, by the way, growth hormone, LH pulsatility. So treat your hormones nicely and they will help you be healthy is the first. So number one importance. A second was, what are the problems, was it?
Yeah, what would be a red flag that you need to go and resolve a problem?
Okay, if your periods stop. Okay. If your periods stop and you're, and assuming you're not on contraception, because as we discussed, that's, if you're not on contraception, and you're not pregnant, and your periods stop, you need, there's something going on, and you need to get it sorted out. Do not be fobbed off with, oh, you're doing a lot of exercise, it's normal for your periods to stop. The definition of amenorrhea from the Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynecology is if a woman's period stops for 6 months. I mean, I would say if it stopped for 3 months, you should start, think, you know, whatever. But if your periods stop for 6 months, and you're not pregnant, then you need to figure out you need to go. If the GP says it's normal, come and see me. Because we wouldn't absolutely, so you need to, we need to do some blood tests to see why they've stopped. It could be a medical condition that needs to be sorted out. Or it could be actually that you've got an imbalance of your behaviours in terms of the exercise and nutrition. Which also, of course, needs sorting out, but it is in a different way. So that's the main one if they stop. If they become very irregular, for example, you know, really, like really irregular. I mean, I'm not talking, when I say irregular, I mean, no one's woman that I know of is exactly 28 days every single time. And there's a range. Anything actually from 22 to 35 is okay. And so if it's, you know, like that, then that's fine. Okay, but if it's like really irregular and it's you're going over 45 days length or shorter than 22, then you need to, again, see, there could be something going on there. You need to sort that out. That's a sign that, so I think those are the main situations. Or if you're really suffering, like we said, menstrual pain, menstruation pain, or if you're really suffering with PMS, you know, in the 2 weeks leading up to your periods, there are things that can be done, right? And there are some particular recommendations from the College of Obstetrics and Gynecology that can help. Yeah. So those are the things you need to look out for. Number three was what to do.
Yeah.
Yes. What kind of thing can help?
Well, it will depend on what the problem was, right?
Yeah.
So if there's a medical problem, we figure that out, right? Whatever that is. If it's the imbalance of the behaviours, then again, it will be
such as is that like overtraining and like doing
overtraining,
too much?
Underfueling, exactly. Yeah. Okay. I mean, people talk about them as separate things, like underfueling and overtraining, but really, it's both of them together because it leads you there's an energy deficit, right? But yeah, so the imbalance in fueling and training, right? So that will need addressing and talking through. Are you having a rest day? Have you got periodized training? Are you fueling all your sessions correctly? Are you refueling within 20 minutes? So it would be looking at the nitty gritty, the details of that. And also if there's any psychological overlay, it's tricky. Some people, it just happens, you know, they didn't realize that. I spoke to someone the other day and they didn't realize that actually training 4 hours every day wasn't a good idea, you know. So it could be just they did not realize, but there's also, it's slightly more, challenging if someone actually is intentionally doing this. But so then we have to talk through why this isn't good for their long-term health. But so deal with that. So it really divides into those. Is it a medical mm-hmm. condition, or is it something we need to talk about behaviours? So that's mm-hmm. what to do next.
Mm-hmm. Nikki, sorry. Go on.
I was going to say, and you kind of you mentioned long-term ill effects. So what is the impact if this doesn't get treated, this sort of situation where your hormones are imbalanced and not happy?
Well, if especially when the period, the FHA, functional hypothalamic amenorrhea, when the periods stop for 6 months and counting, it's on the clock. The bones are on the clock.
Wow.
They start going down, right? Okay. So what happens, your bones, but also like we talked about, the brain, the cognition, all those things. So mm-hmm. you just, number one, your physical health, you could get a stress fracture or an injury. We talked about soft tissue mm-hmm. injury, but you just won't feel great. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, lots of people don't realize, like I said, you often adapt or you're not even kidding yourself. You think, well, I feel fine. But then you don't realize how that actually you could have felt a lot better until you get to that point, if you see what I mean.
Right.
So those are the ill effects. If your periods are stopped due to that, of course, it will depend also if there's another medical reason going on. You don't want to leave that untreated because sometimes the estrogen can be too high, you see. If it's a PCOS or something, mm-hmm. and actually you're not having regular periods. So actually that's a different situation. Actually, too much of a good thing. So it will, again, it will depend, but the bottom line is the body, over millions of years of evolution, female hormones are very finely tuned. Basically, the body is great. It's got it sorted. You know, it's already got it all, the timing, everything, the level, everything is there set perfectly. Sometimes, you know, there's a medical condition puts it out of whack. But actually, sometimes, you know, we haven't quite got our behaviours balanced to what is going to support mm-hmm. that fine tuning. Mm-hmm. So basically, when you say what are the long-term effects, anything that is going to switch, put out of whack, this beautifully timed perfection is going to potentially impact your health, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My question was... mm-hmm. So an athlete comes to you and wants a check. So they have two blood tests, then their mapping is there. Can you then help them using their mapping to personalize, if you want, their training and how intense they're working and at which point they should do so? Or is the mapping not going to work for long term? Am I making any sense?
Right. Yes, no, you're making absolute sense. So maybe we should just take a step back and I should explain about the female hormone mapping, what that is.
Yeah.
So it's this thing that I've developed with Forth, and the sort of practicalities of it are you take two finger prick samples in your cycle, roughly day 14, roughly day 21. Mm-hmm. And then from those two samples, do some clever maths to map out how the hormones are fluctuating. And compare that against a woman with the same cycle length who we know is like a reference range, if you will, who has got good timing and is ovulating and doing everything. So mm-hmm. we can see where you are, okay? Mm-hmm. So the first thing is, are your hormones doing what you would expect, okay? So that's the starting point. Is there a problem, basically? If you are under fueling, for example, in the extreme example, your periods stop, but there is an in-between place where the hormones are still doing something. You're still having periods, but you're not ovulating. And this is not about fertility. This is about your hormones. So the first point of doing this female hormone mapping is we can see if there's any problems, right? If it's, and especially perimenopause, like we discussed, for those guys, we can see what's, for those women, we can see what's going on. So the first thing is just have an overall look. Excuse me. If the hormones are fine, we also ask you to report your well-being. So if you're saying, I'm feeling really, really dreadful, for example, in the luteal phase, when you do the second blood sample, and then I can give you specific advice what to do to cope with, to deal with that in terms of consistent intake of carbohydrate, and I mentioned some recommendations from the Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Chase Berry, and things like this. So we can pinpoint if there are some, you know, challenging times in your cycle. Mm. But so in terms of how to train, I mean, the thing is, if we have the luxury of having, we can train when we want, that's very easy. But what I often find is women have a schedule and they want to do this. So it's more a case of how can we make sure that you can perform that, if you see what I mean. You can do that. So it's the fine tuning of it. But also, it would be also, like you say, for some women, if they're reporting feeling great in the follicular phase, but they say, oh, but I read somewhere that I shouldn't do so much, then it's actually go for it. So it's also partly giving them the reassurance that every woman is different, right? That's the point of doing this personalized hormone mapping and how you feel. Because there's a lot of information out there saying we should all do X, Y, and Z at these times. And it becomes so, actually confusing, and you feel that, oh, you have to do this. And then you feel that something's wrong with you if you don't feel like that, you know? You're meant to feel very strong when in the follicular phase and do weights. But what happens if you just happen to be, I read something in an article recently, one of the professional female cyclists, she said, yeah, my teammates, it's true, they're all going up the hills full whack, but I actually feel dreadful. But she said, I got to accept and know that that was just personal for me. Mm. So it's just knowing, making you take the time to sit back and really look at it, I think, is important.
Yeah.
So sometimes a lot, I'm writing on these reports, you know what? That's fine. Go with what you want to do. But it's actually giving them the reassurance and the evidence that that is fine for them.
I find myself looking at the calendar and being like, oh, I should feel great today. Why am I feeling like this?
Yes, exactly. No, precisely. It makes you really confused, doesn't it? So actually having your own personalised thing and also matching that up with what your hormones are doing and saying, okay, I feel good and I know that there's a reason why, because my estrogen was at a good level or whatever it is, or actually I was feeling bad then and my progesterone's really high. It's like, no wonder. Again, it's this uncertainty.
Yeah.
It's this knowing what's happening and matching up. Mm. It's just, it makes you feel better about making an informed decision and not feeling bad that, oh goodness, I'm meant to be feeling this way and actually I'm feeling something different. It's like, that's fine. That's fine.
Mm. Mm. Definitely.
What's the problem? What's the problem of doing these hormonal tests for one, like doing one test through NHS? How is it different?
Well, you can't.
You can't.
The problem is, you mean just doing the day three? You mean doing the typically on
just
the NHS?
One day. How is that different?
Right. Oh, I see. You can't do the mapping on the NHS, by the way. Mm. Not right? So let me wait. So why is this so much better? Why, when you go to the NHS, and also, frankly, as a doctor, also I do that, because the reason we do day three is because every woman is an individual, like we've just discussed. And although the timing is pretty, you know, everyone has a little bit different. So, but we know for a fact that day three, every woman will be on the third day of their menstrual bleed. You know, we've got like a fixed time.
Yeah.
We're pretty certain. It's like on a map. We know where we are. Okay. We're at the starting point. The only problem about being on the starting point is that when all those hormones are at their lowest. So you're not going to really be able to tell much. And also, you just know what it's like on that day. You have no idea how it's going to progress. You don't know what's going to happen next, you know?
Right.
It's just like looking a snapshot. It's just a static thing. Mm. So that's the problem with it. I mean, it's good if there is definitely a medical thing, like, menopause, not even perimenopause, by the way, menopause, then it will tell you, right? But actually, otherwise, I see so many results, which women whose periods have stopped and they're amenorrheic, and they said, oh, I was told I've got normal results. And to be fair, it's just about in the normal range, right at the bottom. Mm. But it's like, whatever the blood test says, I'm afraid this isn't a normal situation if your periods stop. You see what I mean? So that's why the blood test on day three, it gives you some information, but it's limited. We can't we can't do this personalized thing we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's why it's better to do this more dynamic thing. Well, that's why I wanted to develop this, because I get frustrated. The woman gets frustrated. It's like, well, there must be a better way of doing this. And yes, there is.
Yeah. How common is it for your female patients to have a problem? As in, the female patients who come to you for this, this sort of problem.
Well, I suppose they're self-selected. I suppose you could say, right?
Well, they turned up because they think they might have.
Yeah, exactly. So I suppose I'm very biased. That it's like, but your question about, I think probably it's more common than we think. That because lots of women, number one, maybe thought that they have believed that what's put there, that it is normal for your periods to stop. Mm. So they might not think. So yes, there are lots, maybe. And there are women who think it is normal or acceptable that they're in a lot of pain or whatever. Because, we're women, we just get on with it. We don't complain. We just get on with it. But also there's this quite a big group of women, I think, the tip of the iceberg, who might be having periods, but they're not, the hormones aren't doing their full thing. In technical terms, that's called subclinical anovulatory cycle. Subclinical means you don't notice it, right? So no one could notice it because they're having periods. But anovulatory, they're not doing the full repertoire of their hormones. And actually, there's a very excellent chapter on this very topic. And even I was quite surprised. By the way, this is a very heavy and expensive book, so but this is all about hormones and exercise.
Endocrinology of physical activity and sport.
It's quite a medical thing, so I wouldn't, and also it's heavy and it's expensive. But this thing I've had marked there is this very interesting chapter about this thing was saying subclinical anovulatory cycle, which means that the women's hormones, unbeknown to them and unbeknown even to the doctors, they're not doing exactly what they should. But because they're not doing exactly the full thing, the estrogen will be a bit lower and the progesterone won't go high. Mm. And actually, if you do that for a long time, that's almost as bad as not having any periods, because everything is quite low, you see, in terms of bone health, cognitive function, performance. So I think, and the book says, that there probably are lots of women there who don't realise. But you wouldn't realise unless, for example, you did the mapping test to find out.
And again, that would be down to doing too much and not underfueling, whatever that may be. Okay.
And also it can even be stress.
And stress.
Because the control center in our brain, it doesn't have an email with the title saying, this is stress from not fueling, this is stress from overtraining, this is stress from I've just had a massive argument, or this is stress from lockdown. Yeah. It doesn't distinguish. So we should put in there life stuff.
Yeah. Can lack of sleep as well mean that your hormones are not doing what they should be? If you're chronic lack of sleep.
Correct. Absolutely correct. Because sleep, I have to give you a Shakespeare's quote if I can remember it. Hold on. Sleep is the chief nourisher in life's great feast.
Wow.
Sleep is so, so important because lots of hormones are released when we're asleep.
Yeah.
I mean, melatonin is a sleep hormone. Growth hormone is released when we're asleep. Yeah. And also the LH, that's the control hormone for our periods, that's released when we're asleep. So if you're not getting enough sleep, you're not actually giving it enough time to do these hormones. And also not having enough sleep, it just puts the whole system out of whack. The nice biological clock gets disrupted, diurnal variation of cortisol shuts down female hormones and all hormones. So absolutely, we talk about fueling and training, but definitely the third one is sleep and rest, recovery.
That's because I find it interesting. I've had a lot of problems with sleep. I had insomnia for a couple of years. And I now sleep normally. And I've watched my PMS slowly get better.
Voila.
And it's interesting just talking to you about it. Because I used to find, now I've got a lot more routine and I'm sleeping properly. And it's I find that I can now train much more consistently. But before, I'd get to PMS week and I'd just be, couldn't do anything.
It's so, I think that in that quote, that's Macbeth, by the way, it's also something about unraveling all this mess, it kind of unravels. You know when you go to sleep and you've got all this thing and then actually wake up and it didn't seem so bad.
And it's like your brain is washed.
Exactly. Literally, your brain is, also your neurons are busy reconnecting and all this thing. But anyway, sleep is great. But having it a good pattern like that, but like you said at the beginning, it makes you in a better position to take advantage of your training, and your hormones will be happy because your hormones run on biological clocks. So if your internal biological clocks are saying we want to do this, but you're outside imposing this weird clock that is just like fighting against it, it's literally like this, a fight. But if you can sync your clock, both in terms of sleep and also sync in terms of your menstrual cycle, because you've got lots of clocks on different timescales. You've got your 24-hour clock, you've got your menstrual cycle, 28-day clock, or whatever it is. You know, you've got all these different clocks inside. They're all there. They are programmed to coordinate with each other.
Yeah.
Right? But if then now you bring from the outside this strange crack, you know, clock because of what you're doing, this is why night sleep, night shifts are so bad. That's why being a doctor, I can tell you, it's hell. As a young doctor, the worst thing was doing working all day and all night and no sleep, and then the next over a weekend, and then on Monday morning I literally did not know if I was standing on my head. I had no idea what was going on. I was just totally a wreck. So absolutely, sleep, if you need any proof that sleep is vital, you know, that's what we look to. So a very good starting point for everybody, very simple thing, tip, is like you just said yourself.
I remember
make
when
sure
I had insomnia.
You got a good sleep.
Yeah, I remember when I had insomnia, I would like, I'd have like 1 hour a night or something. And if that. And I remember feeling like I was going completely mad. And
exactly.
Like my memory just went, my short-term memory was gone. Mm. Like I'd like do something, then I'd go, wait, did I do it? And I'd go back and check, and then I'd leave, and then I'd go back and check. And it was like this sort of strange, it was like my brain was just so, like, and it was that washed, it needed to be. And I remember that when
cleansed.
When I did sleep, I'd be like, I feel like I've, like, my brain has had a bath.
Exactly, exactly. So it, absolutely, sleep, I think, is, you make such an important point, so underestimated. We're all running around about, you know, we can get carried away with this supplement and that and da-da-da. You know, all these very, very small details, but actually look at the big picture. Look at the big picture. You know, just look at the basics, the nutrition, the training, the sleep. Look at the big picture, and then then you can go down into the narrow, the finer details if it's required. But actually, just a good night's sleep, like you said, it often fixes whatever it was, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't imagine going to work as a doctor after having to do that.
Well, actually, I think that's now illegal.
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, quite exactly. When I was a youngster, because I am old now, as my children remind me, you know, working all weekend is definitely illegal. But I can tell you, I did. So it is much better for doctors, but it's still not ideal.
No.
Yeah. But listen, you know, the job's the job, and you have to do it. But I just know there are good studies showing that. Whatever the line of work, you know, not just anyone that has to do shifts, patterns, it is bad for your health. Increased risk of cardiovascular health and all that sort of disease and all that sort of thing. So definitely sleep. You know, if we're just practical things, people, what can you take away from this? Just go and look at the big picture, like we said. That's really, really important.
I just had one more question about if that subclinical anovulatory
cycles,
could that impact your fertility in the long term?
Again, it will depend on the reason.
Okay.
You know, like, was it a stress? Was it a thing? It's an interesting question, and one which we don't know entirely the answer to, because it is so under recognized and researched. But I think, and also I get often asked a lot, you know, if my periods did stop, if I had functional hypothalamic amenorrhea, does that impact my fertility? And actually the answer is probably, from what we can see, probably not, because it's like it's just gone into hibernation and comes on again. So probably the same applies for the subclinical anovulatory cycles, assuming that the reason was this imbalance in your behaviours and there wasn't a medical thing going on. Although there is, you know, it is still sort of a little bit up for debate that, but in general terms, you know, that it there's no evidence to show it's definitely affected. Okay, you know.
Okay, cool.
And one more thing before the last question. This is just to let people know that you could help them regardless of where they're based. right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do. I do virtual appointments. In fact, you know, all my appointments are now virtual because I came to realize, you know, during the COVID time that actually people preferred it, even if they lived, in London. It can take a long time to travel around London. And so, you know, yeah, internationally, I offer virtual appointments to discuss in mm-hmm. detail for the person all these things. Mm-hmm. If you're in the UK, then certainly also the blood test through Portforth that I mentioned, I usually ask mm-hmm. all my people if they haven't got their blood tests already to do the blood test there, because I know what we need to know, and mm-hmm. especially the mapping. Although if you're abroad, wherever you are, you know, US, Australia, or wherever, those are the people I see a lot. Mm-hmm. Virtual appointments, obviously it's fine. We just have to sort out the time difference, right? And also even for the blood test, you can send me your blood tests and I can scrutinize them and look at them. So, yeah, anybody listening to this, wherever you are, if they want to get in touch and see.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
And before we ask our final question, I just want to say for people listening, I would love to get from you the details, and I'll put it in the show notes at the bottom, the book you flashed up at the beginning, not the heavy big one. The menopause one. Sources for information for HRT, yes. And also the institute, I think it was the British Institute of Obstetrics and Gynecology.
Yes.
A list of sources so that people sure. know where to go would be amenable, yep. would be yep. wonderful.
Sure.
And also
sure.
your where the website where they can
order stuff.
Order
yeah,
the mapping
and probably
and stuff.
Yeah, and probably my website, because that's got
and
the
your website.
To many. My website's
definitely.
Got. I write lots of blogs on there, and it's got a little bit more blurb about the mapping and then the links to where to order it. You see what I mean?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Actually that, and lots of the articles I write on there will have all those references anyway, we just
Perfect.
Mentioned. I put them, so that actually might be the sort of the easiest thing, because I've all put it all there already, but
sure,
I'll try and pull out those other individual ones. Yeah, I've just recently, two blogs ago, I think I did a particular thing about HRT and with links to that, and so actually that's maybe more readable, if I hope.
Marvellous.
You know what I mean? Rather than you having to trawl through the website yourself.
Yeah, that would be great. Just to make it really, really easy.
Yeah, obvious what to do, where to look. Yeah, sure. Cool.
Exactly, because it's just misinformation is so hard to
avoid. Yeah, absolutely.
When you don't know
absolutely.
Where to look.
No, quite.
And the last question that we ask everybody, what are you fighting for, Nikki?
I'm fighting to keep doing my four classes of ballet a week. I am doing it, by the way, but I'm determined that, and at the moment I'm fine. But that's my objective. Even if I have to attend on a Zimmer, I am going to keep going doing it. I've already fought back from two hip replacements and a cruciate rib tear. So.
Oh my God.
Exactly. So it's like, yeah, come on. Yeah, I've got better hips. But that's my personal fight for me personally. That's my mm-hmm. objective is that, because that's something I want to keep going. But also I'm fighting for, I think what you're fighting for, that we want every woman out there to have the best possible information and support and understanding, so that in the future, every woman can make a really informed choice that's right for her, and not just something that she's been told she should do or whatever. I don't know. So I guess I'm fighting for the individual, aren't I?
Yeah. Marvellous. Thank you so much. Thank you for all the work you do. Like, it's not available on the NHS. It's nowhere else, but we can come to you.
Cool. No, it's
so
been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Women Who Fight podcast, and credit to Will Grant for being our songwriter and sound editor. Please subscribe and share and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at womenwhofight.co.uk, and check out our website for more content.